I had never been aware of his publication, since it had to deal with textile fibers, which was then, of course, a subject of great interest to ICI. And so I then proceeded to present the evidence which I thought supported this concept of Bunn. And what Bunn said in 52 was that there is long-range order in the crystalline state, and the melting phenomenon signifies the breakup of that long-range order. But there is short-range order at the glass transition, and that short-range order breaks up in the amorphous state. But since the order in the glass is of much shorter range than in the crystal, the glass temperature should be less than the melting point. And so he had simply predicted an experimental fact which was discovered independently by myself and also by a man named Beaman, B-E-A-M-A-N, at DuPont. And I presented evidence for various polystyrene derivatives which seemed to support the Bunn hypothesis. Now, this whole thing was a minor part of my lecture and lasted at most 10 minutes. It was designed to do that. Well, Florey was in the chair, although he had nothing to do with the selection of the speakers. And after my lecture, it was the chairman's duty to get up and make some comments on the lectures and trying to get discussion started. General discussion. There had been discussion after each of the three talks. Well, he had very kind words to say about the brilliant lecture given by Rihagi. He was somewhat ambivalent about Hoffman's lecture, but it was pretty clear to me that Hoffman was not getting the royal treatment that Rihagi had received. And of course, I had long been aware of the feuding between Mandelkern and John Hoffman from the period when Mandelkern worked at the Bureau of Standards. So I just ascribed these comments to Florey trying to protect one of his own graduate students. Then Florey began discussing my lecture, and I don't know anymore a single word he said, but it was quite obvious that it was a pretty scathing rebuke for something or everything that I had said. And I was thrown into a state of semi-shock by this unexpected outburst. I remember Professor Treloar coming down front afterwards and saying to me, Florrie didn't understand what you were talking about. Otherwise, he wouldn't have made such comments. Well, I was pretty miserable about the whole thing because I thought I had organized a very good lecture and it had a rather unhappy ending. And I still remember, I sat with Treloar for lunch, choking down my food because I certainly had no appetite for eating. Well, after I got back to Midland, I began trying to sort out why this attack was made on me, and it became pretty clear that I had violated one of the commandments in Florrie's principle of Palmer, principles of polymer chemistry, that amorphous polymers are free of any order. Well, so then I was curious about the evidence behind Florrie's conclusion, and I did a lot of reading of the literature, and I discovered that there was a rather widespread prevalence of feeling among many polymer scientists, without regard to Florrie's book, that certain phenomena, particularly in connection with rubber elasticity, could best be explained by the assumption of some order taking place in the elastomer. And Jeffrey G., who was then head of the chemistry department in Manchester, was one of them, and he was certainly a respected scientist, a fellow of the Royal Society, and authority on rubber elasticity. But he was just one of many people. So I began doing a lot of reading on rubber elasticity and things like the Mooney-Rivlin constants. You know that spelling? I guess you do. M-O-O-N-E-Y dash, and then Rivlin. Rivlin's at Lehigh. There was R-I-V-L-I-N. And and I sort of came to the conclusion that it didn't seem right to simply dismiss the subject the way Florrie had done, based on really a theoretical concept. And I remember, well, I talked around to various people. I remember talking to a Goodyear chemist who was here in Midland for a symposium, and he had published something that seemed to be indicative of order in amorphous polymers, and so I questioned him about it, and he said that he never started a problem without assuming that he was going to run into some order in the polymer. And that for him to explain his experimental results, he had to assume and postulate the existence of order. So this whole thing then began building up in my mind that that Flory maybe was not to not dealing with the facts of life. He had a theory, and but hadn't really tried to prove it yet. Well, and then I came across a Proceedings of the Welsh Conference on Polymers, which is held in Houston, Texas, I think in 1966. What reference did I give you here?
It was published in 67.
Yeah, so published in 67, at which Corradini, who was Dr. Nada's X-ray specialist, gave a lecture there on X-ray crystallography. But he also included some studies he had made on amorphous polyalpha olefins, which had been prepared in Nada's laboratory. And in this series was amorphous polyethylene, polypropylene, polybutene, and I think polypentene. And he showed that except for polyethylene, there were two amorphous scattering halos on all of the X-ray patterns, and that if one interpreted those angles in terms of Bragg's law, one of the distances was constant and small, whereas the other distance increased with increasing size or length of the side group. So that's indicating an intermolecular spacing which depended on structure, so that spacing was bigger for the butene polymer than it was for polypropylene, and so on. Well, after Corradini's talk, Flory got up and disagreed rather violently with Corradini about his interpretation of the X-ray data. And claiming that there was no such thing as structure or order in amorphous polymers. Well, now this discussion is all a matter of record. It's published in the Proceedings of the Welsh Foundation for that particular symposium, including discussion remarks. The discussion was long and lively with people like Bruno Zim, Huggins, and others getting into it, trying to somehow rationalize these conflicting opinions between Flory and Corradini, and suggesting the possibility of some intermediate situation. Less than the perfect order in the crystal, more than the total lack of order predicted by Flory. But Florey would have none of that. He said there are two extremes. There's the crystalline state and the amorphous state. And, well, there the matter seemed to rest. But here again was an opinion by a man who was considered an X-ray expert in the field of crystallinity, talking about order in amorphous polymers. And I became increasingly convinced that Florey was not stating the real-life situation. He was giving a hypothetical argument. Well, let me collect my thoughts here a bit. At the UPAC meeting in Helsinki in 1973, I'll have to check that date, Florey gave a plenary lecture, and his topic had to do with the question of order in amorphous polymers. And he summarized several lines of evidence having to do with mostly with the behavior of elastomers, polyisobutylene, rubber, and polydimethyl siloxane. And these were thermodynamic lines of experimentation. And then he brought up the subject of neutron scattering, which was then very new. And had to do with a series of experiments performed in Germany on blends of deuterated polystyrene and regular polystyrene, as a function of molecular weight. Well, the neutron scattering data showed very clearly that the radius of gyration obtained from the neutron scattering data was proportional to the square root of the molecular weight, which was expected of the random coil model and was what Florey had predicted for unperturbed dimensions of an atactic polymer. Well, that seemed to settle the matter in the minds of very many people. But Greg Yeh, Professor Yeh, Y-E-H, from the University of Michigan, had evidence from electron microscopy for what he considered structured regions in atactic polystyrene. And somewhere along about this time, Professor Kabanyov. Okay, you know that name? From Moscow University, was in Midland. And I questioned him at great length about the position of the Soviet school, because they had taught for a long, long time that there was indeed order in amorphous polymers. And they showed all sorts of experimental data, including photomicrographs, indicating ordered structures that have been found in polymer solutions. Well, Kabanyov gave me a, since he was a protege of Kargin, who was the leader of the Soviet polymer school, he had lived with Kargin's thinking and experimental work and concepts from the beginning, and had in fact just published a lengthy review article outlining the current views of the Soviet school on this question of order. And so it seemed increasingly, and then Ye, who had just come back from a trip to Europe, had reason to doubt the findings of the neutron scattering results, particularly had run into the feeling in Germany and even in France that neutron scattering could not tell anything about order smaller than about around 25 angstroms. And since the objects which Ye had seen in the electron microscope were of about this size or smaller, he was convinced that that the neutron scattering couldn't disprove Ye's findings. Well, this whole thing added up to me to a pretty convincing, but not really thoroughly proved thing yet, that there was some local order in atactic polymers, amorphous polymers. Then in 1975, there was a symposium sponsored by ACS in Atlantic City on the general topic of structure in amorphous polymers. It had been organized by Jeff Allen from England and Elaine Petrie from Eastman Kodak. The speakers are a matter of record. Of course, Florey was the opening speaker. Some of Fischer's colleagues from Germany, from Mainz, were speakers. And various Americans, Dick Stein, and others. And in general, they were seemed to be agreeing with Florey. Professor Yeh was back in Germany and could not attend the meeting. And the only one in favor of any order or structure was Professor Guile, who was then at Case. And he didn't hesitate at all. He had been Yeh's professor, major professor, for Yeh's PhD thesis, and they shared rather common views about structure in amorphous polymers. So here was Guile, all alone, defending the existence of structure. And he was literally alone. He didn't hesitate to argue with Florey, and at one point Florey said, he cited a statistical calculation that indicated 5 times 10 to the 21st configurations possible in a given amount of polymer, and Guile's reply was, well, I'm not going to count them. But it was somewhat a bit acrimonious. Well, it was a one-sided story. Now, I happen to know, having read the program, that not on this program, but lecturing in a nearby auditorium was Don Patterson from McGill University. And he had been, for some years, collecting evidence for structure in normal alkanes based on heat and mixing, and he had really, I thought, persuasive evidence. And since normal alkanes are prototypes of polyethylene, it seemed hard for me to avoid the conclusion that there had to be some kind of order in the amorphous regions of polyethylene. So after this symposium was over, an all-day symposium, I was walking on the boardwalk with Petrie and Jeff Allen, and I said that I was really disappointed in the one-sidedness of that symposium. They apologized and said they had tried to do something about it, but couldn't get people like Yeh and apparently others, and that they too were not happy with the biased outcome. So I said, well, I would be willing to write a rebuttal to this symposium. And they accepted that. And I spent that summer up at our cottage working hectically on preparing a manuscript. I should say writing a manuscript, because all my homework had been done. I had been collecting reprints literally ever since 1970. And I had a whole file drawer full of them. And